Hare Krishna. So I'm very happy to be here today. It's actually my first time here at Gita Jayanti. Every December we're always traveling around the UK to different towns, so we're never in London for Gita Jayanti, but feeling very happy and fortunate to be with all of you. And Shruti Dharmaprabhu actually requested or instructed me that I should take part in this wonderful occasion. So I request the blessings of Shruti Dharmaprabhu, the blessings of Kripa Moya Prabhu. I was actually remembering that before the Battle of Kurukshetra and before the battle took place, Arjun actually went over to the other side and he went to Grandfather Bhishma Dev and he begged for the blessings of Bhishma Dev that he would be victorious in battle. So today I beg for the blessings of Grandfather Kripa Moya Prabhu. That we will be able to discuss and explore some of the wonderful themes that Krishna gives us in the Bhagavad Gita. And of course we offer our respects to His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, who has given us the Bhagavad Gita and who has transformed the lives of so many hundreds of thousands of people through His wonderful writings. So we begin with the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And the first chapter of the Gita is entitled Observing the Armies on the Battlefield of Kurukshetra. So the Bhagavad Gita starts Dhritarashtra uvacha dharma kshetre kurukshetre samaveta yuyutsava mamaka pandavascheva kim akurvata sanjaya. Dhritarashtra is in the palace. He is a blind king, so he cannot take part in the battle. But he has his assistant Sanjaya and he is questioning Sanjaya, Kim akurvata Sanjaya? What is happening there on that battlefield where the Kauravas and the Pandavas and all my sons have assembled? What are the latest events on the battlefield? Sanjaya begins to explain how Duryodhan is on the battlefield and is now going to each and every warrior on the Kaurava side and inspiring them that they must fight to the best of their ability. The Pandavas are very strong, and unless we fight to the best of our ability, we will not be victorious. So in this way, Duryodhan is trying to fire up his armies and inspire them to fight very strongly so that they will be victorious. Despite Duryodhan's strong and hopeful words, many verses in the first chapter indicate that the Kauravas will be defeated. The Kauravas will definitely lose. Despite Duryodhan's confidence, there is no opportunity for the Kauravas to be victorious. Why? Because they are in opposition to Krishna. Krishna is on the side of the Pandavas, and therefore the Pandavas will definitely be victorious. Here is a very important teaching that is the basis of the Bhagavad Gita. The name Dhritarashtra means one who usurps another's land. The name Duryodhan means literally dirty fighter. So Dhritarashtra represents material motivation and Duryodhan represents material action. Material motivations in one's mind give birth to material actions. And material actions will ultimately result in defeat, disappointment, and frustration. 99.9% of people in the world have this notion that if they have a nice family, good money, security in the world, and a nice material life, they will achieve happiness. But Krishna here, right at the beginning of the Gita, is teaching something different. That simply a stable and secure material life will not actually make one truly happy. In order to become truly happy, we have to invite Krishna into our life. Now, Arjuna has Krishna on his side, and Arjuna has no doubt that he will be victorious. But still, in the middle of the first chapter, Arjuna tells Krishna, Senayor Ubhayor Madhye, take me to the middle of the battlefield. I want to see everyone who has assembled here to fight. So Krishna, acting as Arjuna's chariot driver, complies. And Krishna takes Arjuna to the middle. Now, when Arjuna comes to the middle of the battlefield and sees all the people who have assembled there, he sees his friends, he sees his relatives, he sees his teachers, he sees his elders, he sees people that he's known for his entire life. And he sees that all of them will die. He begins to question, should I even be here fighting? Will this warfare really make me happy? Arjuna has a turning point where he questions everything about his own existence. And this is very significant. In our life, Krishna will send situations which make us question our life. And these situations that Krishna puts us in are like alarms. Everyone has an alarm clock. And the alarm clock goes off in the morning, whether you like it or not. And all of us react differently to the alarm clocks. One type of person, they don't even hear their alarm clock in the morning. A second type of person, they hear the alarm clock, they wake up, but then what do? They switch it off or they hit the snooze button. And they go back to sleep. The third person hears the alarm clock and it's difficult. They don't want to get up, but they get up. And once they're up, and once they've had a shower, everything's okay. So similarly, these situations that Krishna sends in our life are like alarm clocks. And some people ignore them. Some people wake up for some time, but then they go back into their old habits again. But the third type of person wakes up and says, there must be something more than just this. That person was Arjuna. And we should also be like Arjuna. That when Krishna sends us challenges or difficult situations in our lives where we begin to question our very existence, we should also wake up and question our existence. So Arjuna was a very busy man. And we are all also very busy. There were 640 million soldiers assembled at Kurukshetra, and they were ready to fight. And the only reason they hadn't begun the battle was because Arjuna was having this crisis of faith. Despite the intensity of the situation, Arjuna still took time to question life. And therefore, this is the key lesson of the first chapter of the Gita, that when we face some dilemma, we should question life. And when we question life, then we begin our spiritual journey. So Arjuna was in a dilemma. He didn't know whether he should fight or not fight. He didn't know what the purpose of his existence was. He said, now I am completely confused and I need help. In his confusion and in his doubts and in his questioning of life, Arjuna did one very wonderful thing. Arjuna approached a guru. He approached Krishna. He said to Krishna, Shishyasteham sadhimam tvam prapannam. I am your disciple now. I am confused and I am coming to you. Please give me some answers that will help me to alleviate all my doubts. This is a very, very important principle if we want to advance in our spirituality. That if one wants to answer the questions of existence, the mysteries of life, If one wants to find true happiness, then one must approach someone who has seen the truth. Therefore, by reading Srila Prabhupada's books and by approaching those and learning from those who have understood Prabhupada's books, one can actually get all the answers to life. When Arjuna approached Krishna in the second chapter, Krishna began to impart knowledge which stands as the basis of all spirituality. Krishna explained to Arjuna in the second chapter, Dehino smin yatha dehe, kaumaram yovanam jara, tatha dehantara prapti dhirastatra namuyati. This knowledge we hear again and again. It's very simple knowledge, but very, very profound knowledge. And only when one understands this knowledge can one really advance in their spirituality. What is that knowledge that Krishna gives to Arjuna? Krishna explains that the sharir, the body, is simply a machine. But that we are the atma, the soul, which is driving this machine. When the body dies, the soul will continue on to another body. Therefore, Krishna said to Arjuna that why are you worrying that all these fighters will die? You should understand that none of them will die because all of them are eternal spiritual beings. Even if you want to kill them, you cannot kill them because the soul cannot be killed. So this knowledge that we are spirit souls is very, very important knowledge because we all want to become happy. Whether one is a student, whether one is working, whether one is living in India or in England, whether one is young or old, everyone is searching for the same thing. Everyone is searching for happiness. But only when we understand we're spiritual beings, we're spirit souls, and only when we feed the soul, only then will we experience happiness. The material world, the material civilization is based on making the body happy. But no matter how many things you do for the body, if you neglect the soul, you will never experience happiness. Therefore, this wonderful knowledge Krishna gives to Arjuna in the second chapter, that we are not the body, but we are all actually eternal spiritual beings. So now, Krishna has explained to Arjuna that you are a spirit soul, you are not the body, and as a spirit soul, you should perform the work in the world in a spiritual way. And therefore, the third chapter of the Gita is entitled Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga means to work in this world and to work in a spiritual way for the pleasure of Krishna. But at the beginning of the chapter, Arjuna has a doubt which many of us may have. Arjuna says, how is it possible to live in this world, to have a family, to have financial pressures, to have social pressures, to have so many other things on your mind, and at the same time, remember Krishna? Can you work in the world and function in the world and at the same time remember Krishna? Arjuna says to Krishna, I don't think it's possible to do two things at the same time, and therefore I think that it's better that I leave the battlefield and that I go to the forest and meditate and simply fix my mind on you with nothing else to think about. So sometimes we also feel like this in life, that life is too hectic, there's too many other things on my mind, too many other things to do, and I can't remember Krishna because life is just too difficult. Once one person came to Socrates, the philosopher, and he said, I don't know whether I should get married or not. Socrates looked at him and he said, you should definitely get married. And the man said, why? Socrates said, if your marriage goes nice and smoothly, you'll be very happy. And if the marriage is a little rocky, don't worry, you'll become a philosopher like me. So Krishna has arranged this whole world and our roles and our different duties in this world to actually teach us and evolve our own consciousness towards Him. So Krishna therefore tells Arjuna, you don't have to leave the world. You don't have to leave your family. You don't have to leave the battlefield. Simply fight. But mam anusmara yudhya cha. Fight and remember me at the same time. And not only remember me, but offer all the results of your activities to me. When we work in this world, we receive certain results. We receive monetary results. We receive results in terms of intelligence and expertise. We receive results in terms of certain influences in the world. And if we use all of these things for Krishna, then our work becomes worship. And this is the teaching of the third chapter that Krishna gives. And one small story I'll tell you is the story of one man named Mr. Sethi. And Mr. Sethi lived in Bombay, and he was in charge of a multinational, multi-millionaire. He was in charge of a firm, a construction firm. And he met Srila Prabhupada in Juhu, Bombay, and he was very inspired by Srila Prabhupada. So he said that I would like to build the Juhu temple for Krishna. So the wonderful Juhu temple that you see was actually masterminded and built by Mr. Sethi and his construction company. And he took the task of building this temple for Krishna so seriously that even though he was the head of the firm, even though he was a millionaire himself, he would go out onto the land and personally make sure everything was done properly. So one time Prabhupada called Mr. Sethi, because Prabhupada was very happy with the way he was rendering service. And Prabhupada called Mr. Sethi into the room. Mr. Sethi had been on the construction site, so he was very dirty. Mud everywhere, and he was in his work clothes. And Prabhupada called him in, and as soon as he entered the room, Prabhupada hugged him. He embraced him. And Prabhupada said to Mr. Sethi, you are building houses for Krishna and Krishna's devotees. And for this wonderful service, rest assured that Krishna is building a house for you in the spiritual world. In this way we can see that whatever situation Krishna has put us in, whatever expertise we have, if we simply use that in Krishna's service, then we can attain the supreme destination. And therefore Krishna says to Arjuna, don't leave the world. Just perform karma yoga. Perform your duties, but perform them for me.
Krishna has told Arjuna that you should work in the world and work for me, and then you will not be affected by the material reactions. Therefore, in the next chapter, chapter 4 entitled Transcendental Knowledge, Krishna explains all about transcendental knowledge. Because only when you have knowledge can you work in the world in a spiritual way. So in chapter 4, Krishna explains, where does transcendental knowledge come from? Krishna explains, Paramasamstapanartaya, I come to establish that transcendental knowledge. Krishna then explains, how is that transcendental knowledge achieved? Krishna says, evam parampara prakram, the transcendental knowledge is received through a line of teachers coming directly from me. Krishna then goes on to explain, who can understand transcendental knowledge? Bhakto sime
Sakhajati. Only if you're a bhakta, only if you're a devotee, and only if you're a sakha, a friend of Krishna, can you understand this knowledge. Then Krishna goes on to explain what is the actual process by which one should get the knowledge. Krishna says, Tadviddhi paripadena pariprashena sevaya upadekshanti de jnanam jnaninastatva darshina. Krishna explains that one should approach a spiritual master, and one should render service, and one should inquire submissively, and then one can receive this transcendental knowledge. And then Krishna says, what is the result of achieving transcendental knowledge? Krishna explains, jnana ashina. This knowledge acts as a sword. And what does this sword do? It cuts out all the doubts, all the confusions that one may have. So most of the people that follow the Vedic tradition, they are very confused people. They are not really sure what the Bhagavad Gita teaches. They're not really sure what they believe in. And many, many people have many, many different ideas about what the Bhagavad Gita actually stands for. The problem is, they haven't read the Bhagavad Gita, and they haven't heard from someone who has understood the Bhagavad Gita. Because if you do these two things, then you will understand this transcendental knowledge very, very clearly. So this transcendental knowledge is very important to imbibe in one's life. One has to make an investment of time to try and understand this transcendental knowledge. In the Niti Shastra, it's explained how an intelligent person spends their time. The intelligent person, according to Niti Shastra, spends their time in this way. In the morning, they speak about gambling. In the afternoon, they speak about women. And in the evening, they speak about stealing. This is how an intelligent person spends their time. Don't worry, there's a purpose to it. In the morning, we're speaking about gambling because we're hearing the Mahabharata, and we're hearing about the gambling match in which Draupadi was disrobed. In the afternoon, we're hearing about women because we're reading the Ramayana, and we're hearing about the wonderful glories of Sita Devi. And in the evening, we're hearing about stealing because we're reading the Bhagavad Puran. And we're hearing about how Krishna stole the butter, how Krishna stole the garments, and ultimately how Krishna is stealing the hearts of all his devotees. So this is how an intelligent person spends their time, absorbing their mind in transcendental knowledge. Lord Shiva says, Manine Moshanam Duksham, Jalashnanam Dine Dine. Very simple, you can understand. Jala means water. Jala shnana means taking a bath with water. Dine dine means every day. So just as we have a jala shnana dine dine, just as we have a bath with water every day to clean our body, similarly, Lord Shiva says, we should have a bath every day in the words of the Gita to cleanse our mind. And therefore, in the fourth chapter of the Gita, Krishna explains, Nahi jnaneina sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate. There is nothing so sublime in this world as transcendental knowledge. And one who understands this knowledge will begin to enjoy happiness.
So now Arjuna has heard all about transcendental knowledge, and he is now considering Krishna's words further. But still the same dilemma is in his mind. Although Krishna has told him, carry on with fighting and offer it to me and everything will be fine, still Arjuna has a dilemma in his heart. He still asks Krishna the same question. Is it really possible to work in this world and at the same time be fully Krishna conscious? Therefore, the fifth chapter, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, again addresses this same point of how it is possible to actually attain perfection through performing one's prescribed duties in this world. In fact, in the third chapter, the example is given of Maharaj Janak. It is explained in the third chapter of the Gita that Maharaj Janak attained perfection by performing his prescribed duties. And there's a very nice story of how the sannyasis, the renunciates, the sages, once came to Janak Maharaj. And they said to Janak Maharaj, you are a great king and you are also renowned as a great Vaishnava. But we cannot understand, as renunciates, we cannot understand how can you think of two things at once? How can you be a king and attend to all of these daily affairs and at the same time always have your mind fixed on Krishna? We do not think that it's possible that you can think of two things at once. Janak said, it's possible. They said, how? Janak said, come back tomorrow and I'll explain. So they all came back the next day, all the sannyasis and all the sages. And as they arrived, Janak had laid out plates for all of them. And they said, okay, now will you give us the answer? So Janak said, I'll give you the answer, but take prasad first. Prasadam comes first. So they said, okay, no problem. So they all sat down. And as they sat down, Janak came down and he began to serve them. They were all very happy. But as he was serving them, they all looked up. And as they looked up, they saw that on top of every single seat, on top of every single person, was a sword. A sharp sword. And the sharp sword was hanging on a thin piece of string. So they all looked at these swords, and they looked at Janak and they said, my God, this looks a little dangerous, you know. Are you sure it's safe for us to take prasad here? Janak said, it's safe. Don't worry, it's part of the decor. Because Janak was renowned as a great Vaishnava, they trusted him. Janak continued to serve. They all took prasad. It was a quick meal. When they finished the meal, they all got up. And Janak said to them, did you all eat? They said, yeah, we ate. He said, have you digested the food, satisfied? They said, yes, we've digested the food, we've satisfied. He said, now let me ask you, what were you thinking of? They said, we were just thinking of those swords up there. He said, now can you see how it's possible to think of two things at once? So he said, similarly, we work in the world. We go to our job. We take care of our family. And we satisfy all the social obligations that we have. But as a Vaishnava, as a devotee, in the back of our mind, the thought is always there of Krishna and the ultimate purpose of why I am here. And therefore in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna again explains that Arjuna, you can perform karma yoga, action in Krishna consciousness, and do all your duties in this world, and still you will be considered the topmost spiritualist. So Krishna has emphasized to Arjuna to work in the world and offer everything to Krishna. In chapter 6, Krishna presents the alternative. Krishna, in chapter 6, talks about the process of dhyana yoga. Now, we've been sitting here for maybe about an hour. Maybe some of our legs are hurting. Maybe our minds are drifting off in different places. Maybe we're even feeling like it might be nice to have a little bit of a nap. Krishna explains the process of dhyana yoga that they were practicing in the bygone ages, where someone, a yogi, would sit with straight back, abstaining from food and water, controlling the breathing process, and in complete silence, meditating on Krishna. Krishna presents this process to Arjuna and tells Arjuna, "Do you think you can do such a thing?" Arjuna says, "Impossible." Arjuna says, "Vayur eva sudushkaram." To control the mind is more difficult than to even control the wind. What to speak of sitting all day long in silence trying to focus on Krishna within the heart, even to sit down for 2 hours in the morning and do 16 rounds of Hare Krishna is difficult. One morning, one guest came here during the japa time. So he came in, and because he was a new person, I thought, let me go over and speak to him. Because someone comes at that time, they may think it's a little strange. So I explained to him that every morning we chant. We chant on the beads, and we chant the Hare Krishna mantra. And our process is very simple. Simply chant and be happy. So I told him that, chant and be happy. And then he looked around the room. One person was chanting and his head was going like this. Another person was in the corner, he was falling asleep. Another person was going around Tulsi Maharani 100 miles per hour trying to focus his mind. He was seeing the whole scene and then he looked at me and he said, "Chant and be happy? These people look like they're in pain." I said, "Yes, chant and be happy is the ultimate. Maybe chant, struggle for some time, and then be happy." Because the mind is going for so many places. If you want to know the nature of the mind, Niti Shastra explains, "Markatasya surapanam tatra vrishchika damsanam tanmadhye bhuta samcharo yadva tadva bhavishyati." I want you to imagine a monkey. Now imagine an intoxicated monkey. Now imagine an intoxicated monkey that's been bitten by a scorpion. And then, tan madhye bhuta samcharo, in the middle of all of that, imagine the monkey has now been haunted by a ghost. Yadva tadva bhavishyati. Can you ever imagine what that monkey will do next? No. This drunk monkey is exactly like our mind. Our mind is going here and there and everywhere. What to speak of around the world in 80 days, around the world in 80 seconds. So, Arjuna says the mind is very difficult. There must be some other way. Therefore, Krishna then explains at the end of chapter 6 that you don't have to do all of these difficult processes that the ancient yogis were doing. You simply perform bhakti yoga, and this bhakti yoga of hearing, chanting, and doing some practical service for Krishna, this is actually the process for the age. And therefore, Krishna ends the 6th chapter by explaining, "Yoginam api sarvesham madgaten antaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamo mataha." The topmost yogi is the yogi who is in bhakti yoga. the yogi who is completely devoting all of his activities to me. And therefore, in the sixth chapter of the Gita, Krishna says that these ancient austere processes are not for this age. Simply hear, chant, and do practical devotional service, and that will lead you to perfection.